Well, hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nestler. America at Heart, Behind the Shutter, celebrates the colors, characters, and contours of America's West, captured through photography by Michael Fain, Tom Coralogos, Catherine Rabinow, Gail Waterman, and emerging artist Devin Poole, with an artist's reception tomorrow, September 9th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Coralogos Gallery in Basalt. And Coralogos says this group of photographers captures both the mysticism and true grit realism of the West, from Waterman's macro perspective of its antiqued surfaces to Poole's larger-than-life landscapes to the mystic minimalist black and whites of Fain to the journalistic realism of Coralogos to the double-take abstracts of Catherine Rabinow. There will be something for everyone to enjoy. Well, Devin Poole, one of the featured artists, joins Express Yourself today. Devin recently won the landscape category of the second annual Aspen Photo Challenge, as well as the peer favorite category. Devin has also been named one of the top nine Colorado Instagrammers by Out There Colorado. His work has been shown at the Bird's Nest Gallery in Aspen and has benefited with his photos, Protect Our Winters, a leading climate advocacy group for the winter sports community. And now comes his part in the new show at the Coralogos Gallery. Devin Poole, welcome to KD&K.
Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. Are you happy with that show at the Coralogos Gallery?
Very happy with the show.
How so? What makes it good for you?
Well, being included with that group of photographers is an honor for me. As it says in the introduction, I'm an emerging artist. I am new to the scene, and so being included with this group is a real honor, and I'm lucky to be there.
Mm. So did you picture this when you first started, so to speak, did you picture this when you first started your photography career? Did you see these kinds of things happening?
Not at all. My photography career sort of sprung out of nothing, almost. I never intended to be a professional photographer necessarily. I just loved photography, and I traveled the wilderness often, and I was photographing my travels, and then it turned into something that other people enjoyed seeing, and then now it's turning into something that people would like to pay for.
So you have a lot of experimenting behind you.
I do, yes.
Huh. Did you go to school to study?
I did not go to any photography school. I started playing with the camera maybe 8 years ago, to the point where I was taking a lot of photos, and then I started to hone in, my eye for it. And initially it was all for me just to remember my trips. And then I started realizing that I wasn't able to capture what I wanted to capture with the equipment that I had. So I invested in upgrading my equipment, and then read a few books, really. And it just clicked. I understood everything I was reading almost instantly, got out there and started practicing, and it came really naturally.
Hmm. Do you remember those first few photographs where you went, I might keep doing this. This is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was a lot of iPhone photos initially that I realized I was able to capture a beautiful photo with just an iPhone.
Uh-huh.
And so, they say that the best camera for the photo you want to take is the one you've got. So, but I realized I needed better equipment than I had, and that's where it really took off from there once I upgraded.
Well, I know iPhone exhibitions are a thing.
Yeah.
Somewhere down the road, I guess we'll see a Devin Poole iPhone exhibition. Huh?
Maybe so. Yeah.
So you've spent lots of time in the local wilderness areas to great effect. I mean, I've gone to your website, which is devinpoolephoto.com, and checked out those pictures and just was dumbfounded. What's the secret? I know that you like that big vista and you like the unique perspective. So how do you approach... Do you think of a photo before you take it? I mean, way before you take it? Or is it all serendipitous?
Absolutely. I think a lot about it before I take it. Whenever I have a trip planned, I look at maps and I sort of think about what different spots in a valley or on a hillside might give me as far as perspective on a lot around here, a lot of commonly photographed areas. But I realized... I have a drive to get to places that people haven't been. And a lot of times I actually kind of almost dream of the photo prior to
Oh, really?
To getting out there. So I almost see it in my head before I actually even get there. And then from there, it's just thinking about the timing of the light, the sun, the moon, the stars, where everything's going to be at the right time, and try to be there for that moment.
You like low light situations.
I do. I like low light. I think it's an attractive light. I think the more light you have, the more similar it looks to other things. And so whenever you experiment with the low light stuff, you can bring out light that our eyes actually don't even see, but the camera can capture that light.
Oh, interesting. So some of those pictures we were looking at together before the show from your website, how does that manifest, that idea that the camera's capturing things that the eye isn't seeing?
With a longer exposure, obviously our exposure setting for our eyes would be an instant.
Okay.
You can't change the amount of time that light is absorbed into one moment with your eyes. But with the camera, you can have it capturing light for 30 seconds and just absorbing. And then the finished product is one single moment of 30 seconds of captured light by a very advanced piece of equipment, the magical little black box that is our camera.
Uh-huh. You're shooting all digital, right?
All digital, yeah. Uh-huh. Canon.
Okay. Do you ever shoot single lens reflex at all?
I do. I have three film cameras.
Huh.
I want to shoot more than I do with film. I just have my hands full with the digital side of things as it is, and that would add a lot more time. And so we think we have all the time in the world, but we don't
yeah,
always.
So it works. Well, I guess that would add a whole another layer of toxicity to the process, dealing with a darkroom.
Yeah, but it also takes you back to the roots of photography itself. Most of what you learn in digital photography is the same as what you do on film. A lot of the same techniques and everything are used. And so I think if I did do it, it would improve my digital photography in the end. And so I'm working towards it. I have the stuff to do it and just need to get out there.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. How much manipulating are you doing on these photos on the computer after they're shot?
I'll be honest, I do a lot of manipulating. That's the part that I enjoy almost the most about photography is taking the captured light, the information that I can save on my camera, which I consider the capturing to be very scientific and less artistic in some ways, and then getting it on the computer, and that's where the art really starts to take form. I have all this information to mess with and make it look like it did in my head. Like I said, if I saw the photo in my head, I can make it that way.
Uh-huh.
But in order to do that, I still have to capture that the right light at the right time and in the right places.
In that process, I suppose sometimes you might be surprised. You come up with something that you didn't see in your head.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That happens a lot. And then if you you can brighten things and darken things, and it gives it a whole different feel. And so I think that's really where the artistic side of it comes in for me is the post-processing part and manipulating that information I was able to capture. And I shoot in all raw, obviously, and so it's a very bland photo whenever you start. And so it's meant to be manipulated in digital photography.
Interesting. How about that? And now you mentioned the scientific side of things. How does that manifest in your process?
Yeah, the capturing is very structured. I want, there's fractions and ratios of composition that I want to capture, which you could say is artistic as well. I think of it scientifically. But the amount of light that's coming into the lens, getting all the aperture and sensitivity of your sensor all just right. And I have a very structured approach to it, and I try to get that information and get it back to my computer. And yes, to me, it's very structured. It's less, the later in the show is where I feel like the creativity really pops out.
Huh. Interesting. And I think I saw, maybe it was on the Strafe website, the Strafe outdoor clothing website, where there are a few of your photographs there and along with a description of some of the circumstances of those photos. And at one point you say you plan out your angle, like Well, for instance, there you have one picture there of a full moon setting over the Maroon Bells.
Yes, that's one of my favorites.
And what makes that one of your favorites?
That specifically was one that I saw in my head well before I got up there. I knew it had to be taken at a certain time. The full moon in late May was whenever that was going to happen. I knew everything would line up. But what was really interesting was that it was an extremely colorful sunrise. That part I couldn't have planned out. You get a different sunrise every day, and it's hard to really predict what you're going to get as far as the special color goes. But I knew that the moon would be there. I knew that if I got up there at that right time, the moon would be behind it. And then I was just gifted with amazing color and soft light on the peaks.
Does that feel like some sort of validation from the universe when you get those kinds of congruences?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a pretty unreal experience where I get very giddy. I get excited. I start laughing to myself, and I just can't believe how perfect things go sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you're paying your dues to get some of those, aren't you? I mean, you're sitting there sometimes for a long time to wait for the shot.
Absolutely. I've sat in one spot for 3 days before. Waiting for that moment that I pictured to come up, and sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes you get out there, and as far as photography goes, it was a waste of time. As far as experience goes, you never regret being there. But sometimes the photo doesn't happen the way I anticipate, and I have to try it again another time whenever things line up.
So there must be, you must have a bucket list of potential photos.
There's a long list in my head of places to go, things to do, and sometimes the opportunity arises once a year for a photo, for the things to be in the right setting. And so you miss it this year, you have to wait till next year to go back and do it again.
Well, along those lines, did you photograph the eclipse?
I kind of blew it on photographing the eclipse. I wasn't ready. I planned on going to Idaho for it, and then plans fell through for that. So I watched it from here, and,
It wasn't the same.
Photography wise, the experience, like I said, sometimes you have to just let photography go and just experience things. And the experience was great. Photography was whatever.
Well, since you specialize in the unique perspective, what do you think a unique perspective of an eclipse would involve?
I was hoping to get to the Sawtooth Range of Idaho because very jagged granite peaks surrounded by lakes. And I was thinking that maybe a dark red landscape would almost make it look a little bit apocalyptic.
Ooh.
So I guess I'll have to wait till the next one.
Well, the next one goes through Cleveland, so you better book your hotel room now.
Yeah,
but that's not the same as the Maroon Bell Snowmass Wilderness, is it?
No, not the same.
But I noticed you have a few cityscapes on your website.
Yeah, I like to play around with it whenever I'm in a city. There's a lot of motion and interesting light to capture in a city as well. I don't feel as connected to a cityscape as I do to a wilderness landscape, but it's fun to mess around with.
You have several photos. I was privileged to live for 20 years in an aspen grove on the backside of Aspen Mountain, and it changed my life. And there are several pictures of aspen groves on your website, and it just took me back. And we were talking about one of them before we came on the air here, and you mentioned something about negative space. And I started thinking about it and realized that's what makes that so incredible of a photograph, is there's no negative space. I wonder if you'd talk about negative space and how you play with it. Do you try to avoid it? Is it useful to have it sometimes? Tell me more.
It's a sort of natural thing that my eye looks for, is a lack of uninteresting things in a photograph. So I want every aspect of my photograph to be interesting. And so in those aspen groves, I want everything that's going to be in the frame to be something that you want to look at. And so the one you're talking about specifically, I had to walk through lots of different aspen groves to find a place where there was nothing but aspen trunks and golden leaves to look at. So it was sort of a downsloping hill to where the canopy in the background was directly behind the trunks in the foreground. And then
behind that, it was dark, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have to have a tripod for pretty much anything I do. That's another aspect that you have to have, is to, for those low light situations, the camera can't be moving. Aspen grove photos are very common, and I try to do something that I haven't seen done before, and otherwise I won't really take that photo.
Huh.
But those are my mom's favorite photos, and so I always have to take them to send to her, and okay. It turns out people end up liking them. So.
Well, we were talking about how you're presenting your photos at the show, and you mentioned that it's under acrylic glass. I wonder if you'd talk a little about that process.
Yeah, so the photos that I have printed are... There's an aluminum backing, 1/8 inch thick. I have the photos printed with laser printing on silver halide paper mounted to the aluminum backing. And then in front of the photo print would be 1/8 inch thick piece of acrylic glass. So the photo is sandwiched between aluminum backing and acrylic glass. And I feel like the glass really brings out the color and the depth of the photo and the details. And it almost creates an image that you feel like you could get sucked into. And I really like that aspect of it. And so it's really it's the most expensive way to do it, but it's the only way that I would like my photos to be presented.
Is that what allows those photos to pop?
Absolutely.
Because on your website, they just pop.
Yeah. And so you take a photo that would pop on screen like that, you add the glass to it, and it gives it even more depth than it had before. And so with my style, I feel like that's the best way to display it, is to bring out that depth as much as possible.
Interesting. In the few minutes we have left here, Devin, I want to talk a little bit about your website. They're really great photos. I like the presentation of it. You've got it divided into 6 sections: black and white, Colorado, huts.
I love my huts.
You have a night section, and that's the section I want to talk about here in a minute. Desert and then travel. So let's talk about some of those night photos. Obviously not completely natural, are they?
No, and that's what I was saying, where you bring out some light that your eyes didn't even see. The Milky Way is constantly just shining light at us, and it's such a faint amount at times that we don't see it, but there's 100 billion stars out there that are
sending
photons right to us, and the camera just sucks those all up. And so you can really bring a lot out of the sky that you didn't even realize was there.
So those photos are taken from one place. So you're taking a picture of the sky, and then you're taking a picture of the landscape under that sky. Is that right?
So on one photo on my website, it's 2 different photos put together, where I took a photo of the sky and then I took a photo of some peaks in Patagonia and put them together. The rest of the night photos were one exposure.
How about that?
That I didn't have to, you know, come and... That's an interesting technique that brings out a lot of cool details that you couldn't do otherwise. But I like the idea that it's all just from absorbing light from one scene.
Uh-huh.
So I try not to stitch. I've done it for one photo that turned out really well. It's one of my favorite photos I've ever taken, but I try not to do that.
Majestic photos.
Thank
I you. Mean, you know, the landscape is majestic in and of itself, and then to be underneath 100 billion stars is just eye-opening and mind-blowing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I always say the hardest part of night photography is just getting out of your sleeping bag. The actual photography part isn't that complicated if you just have it all down. But it's really tough to get out of the tent sometimes at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Now, are you going out alone when you do these, most of these, or?
I have a few partners that I go pretty reliably with. In the winter, I find it a lot harder to find a partner, somebody who wants to go sleep out in the snow. So I actually end up doing a lot of solo stuff. I'm very, very meticulous about the details of my travel and communicating in a safe way with people back home. I take a satellite texting device so I can let them know what's going on. But I'm not going to not do something just because I can't find someone else to do it with me. And so I end up doing a lot of solo stuff.
Pardon me. I want to plant 2 seeds in your mind.
Sounds good.
One of them comes from a book that I read, which was a description of a moonless night in a rice paddy in Bali.
Wow.
And it was not cloudy. It was completely clear. So you had that 100 billion star sky reflected in the rice paddy. And then hovering above the water were fireflies.
Wow.
Different heights above the water. So you had that between the stars and the reflection of the stars. And then you also had the reflection of the fireflies.
Wow.
In the water. And I read this perfectly described part of this book. And I just went, I see that. Mm-hmm. He described it so well. But looking at your website, I can see that. So if you're ever in a rice paddy,
I'll add it to the list.
Yeah, put it on your list. And the other thing was, one morning I was flying to Denver from Eagle County Airport. It was September. And we got up in the air before the sun came up, and we happened to cross the Continental Divide exactly when the sun hit the divide. So picture it, because, you know, the divide is the first thing that catches the sun, obviously, right? And looking out the windows both directions was this ribbon of light going north and south.
Very special. From,
oh, my God. I don't know how you'd capture that. Maybe you'd have to, I don't know, get a drone or something. Would you be against using a drone in your photos?
There's a lot of conversation about that going on. I prefer not to use a drone. I like to use my feet to get where I need to go. But you can capture a lot of interesting things from the sky that you can't capture from the foot. So, but I've been talking with EcoFlight about getting up in the air and photographing, and I photographed from planes a few times, and you can get some cool perspectives that way as well.
Hmm. Well, Devin Poole, it's been a pleasure talking with you about your art.
Thanks for having me.
All the best of luck to you.
All right. Thank you.